And welcome to Talking Talmud. I'm Ann Gordon, here today with Yardena, who's going to start us off today. We are in Daf, in Brachot, Daf Yudalid.
Hi, everybody. Today I want to talk about an interesting framing that the Gemara presents on Daf Yud Daled. The Gemara has been in the middle of a discussion of when one is allowed to sort of interrupt their tefillot, whether it be Shema, whether it be Hallel, in order to greet a person or give kavod to a person. And it goes through a variety of different scenarios. If you're in the middle of a paragraph, if you're in between prekim, during Shema, how that would apply to Hallel as well. And then the Gemara brings down another thought about this. It reads as follows in the middle of Yud Daled Amud Aleph. Amar Rav Idi bar Avin, Amar Rav Yitzchak bar Ashyan. Asur lo la'adam la'asur chepsav, kodem shegit pralel. So Rav Idi brings down the following halacha, that it is forbidden, using the language of asur, it is forbidden for a person to do personal business before they actually pray in the morning. And what is his proof of this? He brings a pasuk from Tehillim. It is Tehillim that says 85:14. That reads the following: Tzadik lefanav yehelech v'yaseim lederech pa'amav. Right, righteousness will precede him, and will set his footsteps on the way. So the interpretation of this pasuk means that a person should pray first, in other words, make himself righteous before God, and only then should he v'yaseim lederech pa'amav, set himself upon his way. So basically, the halacha that Rav Yehuda is bringing here is that when a person gets up in the morning, really the first thing that they should do is daven right away. And I thought about this really in a modern context, because I think today with our cell phones, with a lot of people who, like I try to, can't say I always do exercise every day, but sometimes there's a lot of things that we tend to do, like check our email, look at Facebook, exercise. And I'm not saying, trying to say this in a way to give like Musser to anybody, but I'd be curious what Rav Edie would say about this in today's modern world. It's not that I don't get around to davening, but I certainly sometimes tend to side on that I do, some activities before I actually get around to that. So that was the first piece of the framing. And then just a little bit later, the Gemara brings down another teaching. Amar le Rav Acha b'rei de Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. Hachi Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Rabbi Yochanan. So Rav Acha, the son of Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, he's in the middle of a conversation here to Rabbi Yonah, and he says this was something that Rabbi Chiya would say in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Kol hamasbia atzmo midivrei Torah v'lo vasrino to b'sarot ra'ot shenemar v'saveya yalin kol yipaked ra. So anyone who, and it's very interesting the language he uses here, who satiates himself with the words of Torah and then goes to sleep, will not be delivered evil. I mean, literally the word like Bisso wrote is news, evil news. And then again, quotes another pasuk here. This is a pasuk that is from Mishlei, okay, and here this pasuk is saying that a person will rest and be satisfied and will not be visited with evil. And this by itself is very, very interesting. First of all, the language here that's used, that you somehow satiate yourself with Torah, but the halacha here that people use, that people learn from here, is that before one goes to bed, actually what they should do is that they should learn Torah, and then one will not be visited by bad dreams. So first of all, there's the assumption here that somehow what you actually dream does come true, or it somehow colors what your day is like. And I'm sure all of us had the experience of where we've had a bad day, and then you wake up in the morning and it just kind of, it throws your entire day off, right? Like you're either nervous or you're distressed about something. But again, I'm really stuck on this language of like maspia. And I know that it's reflecting what it's saying in the pasuk, right? The seva yalin, like a person will rest satiated. So therefore, we're saying if you're satiated with Torah, you will rest better. But it's, what does it mean to be satiated with Torah? Like, did you learn a certain amount? Is it enough just to say, like, you learned a pasuk or a few psukim? You know, what is it that actually gives you that protection? So, but I just, the two of these teachings together, I just was that I think really what the Gemara is getting at is how is it that we frame our day? Obviously, we know that people are going to be busy with work, relationships, all those things that, you know, fill our day up. I personally am like a, you know, crazy list maker. So I make lists all day of all the crazy things that I need to get done in one day. But this Gemara really reminded me in a way of, but how do I really want to frame the day, right? What is it that I want so that when I get up in the morning, before I do my own personal things, I dive in to God, I take that time to pause and to connect. And then before I go to bed, I connect again. And how do I do that? I do that through Limud HaTorah. And I don't know, I was thinking about that maybe this is a way, some like a practice that I should really adopt, that I shouldn't do sometimes, you know, some of those things that I always do before I actually get around to davening. And what would my day look like when it ended? I try to read. I probably don't read as much as I should. But if it really ended with some form of Limud HaTorah, and just to think about this framing that the Gemara wants us to bring to our days, beginning with prayer, which obviously would involve thanks, an acknowledgement for all the things that we have in this world and sort of what it is that we hope to accomplish in a day. And then ending with Limud HaTorah, which, yes, as we often say, that's sort of the goal. It's a mitzvah to learn Torah all day. But I think the Gemara was acknowledging, like, not everybody actually can do that, but at least try to do it before you go to sleep, and your sleep will even be better.
This, of course, works out very well for me, given our recording schedule. Yordana is in New York, and I am in Jerusalem, and that's a 7-hour time difference. So we snag different hours of the day to record. This very moment is late at night for me, in which case I'm fulfilling, Yordana, everything you're talking about in terms of Talmud Torah right before I go to bed.
So, Anne, you'll have to tell us tomorrow if you had like the best dreams ever.
ever. Okay, so what I'm intrigued by is actually on Duff, is on Yadalad, but it's on Amud Bet, which is as follows. We've been talking about Kriyat Shema since the first Mishnah of Masechet Brachot. And here we finally get the description and the prescription of what Kriyat Shema has to be. And I think that that's, you know, it's about time. Until now, we've taken it as a given that we know what's going on. And that's an interesting phenomenon that takes place in the Gemara, where much of what is discussed, it's not necessarily introduced from the very beginning, right? We're introduced in medias res. We're in the beginning. We already know what it is to say Kriyat Shema long before we open Masechet Brachot and learn about it, because we've been living it thus far. But also that's what Chazal have been doing. So we have here a description of exactly what does Kriyat Shema need to be. And at some point they really figured it out. But after that, there were all these references back to what they were already doing in practice. So the Gemara says as follows. Kani Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai Omer, Badin hu sheyakdim shema levahaya im shamoa. It's logical to say that the pasuk of Shema should precede the paragraph of Vahaya im Shamoa. Shezel lilmod, vezel lilamed. Because one comes to learn and the other is to teach. Vahaya im Shamoa levayomer. And the paragraph of Vahaya im Shamoa should precede Vayomer, that paragraph of Tzitzit. Shezel lilmod, vezel laasot. Because this is to learn and this is to teach. Meaning that we end up with an increasing level of activity, I would say, from Shema and onward up. So let's take a step back and understand that what's going on here, because we're so accustomed to saying Shema from a siddur, right, from a siddur, and it begins with the pasuk of Shema, and it goes to Baruch Shem Kavod, and then we've got V'yahavta, and then we've got Vahayim Shamoa, and then we have Vayomer, the parak of Tzitzit, and we're done. And it's all one package, right? Except for that at some point in my life, and I'm sure you and yours, you discovered that this is not all one package at all, and it's really from basically four different places. The pasuk of Shema, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokim Hashem Echad, is Sefer Devarim, Perek Vav Pasuk Dalet, and the paragraph of Vahafta follows soon thereafter in Perek Vav. The Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuto Le'olam Va'ed statement that comes, that intercedes between the two, is a response that was, that's a Chazalic statement. It's a much, much later statement. It's not a Pasuk in that, in the same, from the Chumash to, it's there as a response of a statement of faith upon the statement of faith, right? Shema is a statement of faith. And Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuto Le'olam Va'ed is a recognition of, to say that we are praising God, and there's different stories in the Gemara and elsewhere as to what elicited people to jump up and say Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuto Le'olam Va'ed, that we need to praise the name of God. And I don't want to get into what those are right now. If you are following along with all of the words of the Daf, you have seen at least one of these stories. And there are other midrashic stories that we know elsewhere. Ve'ahavta, as I said, is in Devarim Perek Vav. And then we jump in the Chumash of Devarim to get to the paragraph of Vahaya Im Shamoa, which is Devarim Yud Aleph, the 11th chapter of Sefer Devarim. And then the paragraph of Vayomer, that goes back to Tzitzit, is in fact in Sefer Bamidbar. We go all the way back to Bamidbar Tet Vav. Now, then we have the package of Shema, meaning that is Kriyat Shema. And the Gemara here describes that we're coming from Lilmod, a status of learning, Lamed, to teaching, meaning the messages that are in each of these paragraphs, and eventually come even to La'asot, that there's an activity, a fulfillment of a mitzvah that is done in the Birkat of Tzitzit. When we can, so, and there we have Shema, meaning, and the Gemara here takes a great deal of time to discuss and describe how we build this entity that we call Kriyat Shema. And then we're done, meaning there's, now we have it. There's some discussion over how it comes to be in this order, and is there any machloket about it? And of course there is. And the bottom line principle is that we begin with Ol Malchut Shamayim, that we, Yardena talked about this already yesterday, that we are accepting upon ourselves the yoke of the kingdom of heaven. And then after that, the yoke of mitzvot, Kabbalat Ol Mitzvot, that we have a recognition of our dependence on God before we have a recognition of our obligation in mitzvot. One follows from the other and can't, and doesn't really work without the first, right? You can't really talk about mitzvot without first having an acceptance of Hashem. Or if you do, you're talking really about a very different understanding of mitzvot than this traditional understanding of the Gemara of commandment. Now, I would like to jump to the end of the daf. And here I will, we have a question for everybody. It's an interesting thing. I will read it first and then explain what I find interesting about it. Amar Ula. Kol ha-kore kriyat shema b'lo tfilin ki'ilu me'id edut sheker ba'atzmo. Anyone who reads kriyat shema, who says kriyat shema without wearing tfilin, without laying tfilin as a proper verb, it's as if he bears false witness against himself. Amar Rav Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rav Yochanan, ki'ilu hikriv ola b'lo mincha. It's as if he's offered a korban ola without the accompanying korban mincha. V'zevach b'lo nesachim, or a shlamim, a holiday offering without the other nisuchim, the other libations that accompany it. Now, what I find interesting here is, I'm just as a given, what is it talking about? If you read Shema, straight away, you've got a mitzvah of tefillin mentioned in the paragraph of V'ahavta. So you're talking, everybody who reads Kriyat Shema is talking about the mitzvah of tefillin. And the Gemara's point is, if it's a day of tefillin, meaning it's not Shabbos, it's a day of tefillin, and you're saying Shema and you're not laying your tefillin, then it's a contradiction in terms. What are you really doing anyway? And for the first time, presumably because we have all this discussion of the massive, wonderful event of the Women's Siyum HaShas and all this discussion that's been taking place about women in Talmud Torah, and articles upon articles have been written and podcasts and everything about women learning the Daf Yomi and so on, and to what extent do people find themselves on the pages of the Gemara? Well, I always found myself in the pages of the Gemara, or not, right? It was never off-putting to me that the Gemara is spoken b'lashon zachar, that it's really, for the most part, Rabban and men talking. But in this, for the first time, I was like, oh, well, there we go. That's where people would react. And I understand it, right? Because if I'm saying Kriyat Shema, I'm not wearing tefillin, and I do not think that what I am doing is bearing false witness against myself, because I am, according to the same people who say this, I should not be wearing tefillin. There are women who wear tefillin, who lay tefillin. I'm sorry, it's the wrong verb. It really is laniach tefillin. It's to lay tefillin. There are women who do lay tefillin, but I do not. And the question of, is the Gemara here excluding me from the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema because I'm excluded from the mitzvah of tefillin, is an interesting one to ponder. I truly don't react that way, but I couldn't ignore the implicit question here based on all these other discussions that I've been hearing or privy to over the past several days.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, Anne. It's a really interesting question of how do we see ourselves on the daf, and you know, also that we do bring a modern read sometimes to some of the things that are on the daf. That to me is really just the beauty of Torah Sheba Al Peh, that we see it differently in each and every generation. And what does it mean to have so many women who are interested in Talmud study, able to do Talmud study, and come across these types of passages? We'd love to hear from our audience if they have any ideas of how they sort of integrate these types of pieces when they read it, and you know, how do they deal with those types of things. So that's our daf for the day. Until tomorrow's daf, we will learn with you all later.